With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I do appreciate it when you subscribe and particularly when you leave reviews. That is massively important for chart reasons or whatever it is. And also follow us on Twitter because that's where the action happens. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon. And of course, if you want to find me, Tim and Phil, well, we do our Egg Chasers podcast every week, every Monday or Sunday, without fail for something like 5 years now at Rugby Podcast. Go find us there. Brilliant. Okay, today's guest. I've been hunting down this guest for literally months. Finally found a window in his diary where we could do this interview. So, here we go. It's me talking to Brendan Venter. How are you, Brendan?
I'm good. Thank you, David. It's a pleasure being with you.
Now, just before we get into the rugby stuff, am I right? You're in Cape Town now. Is that correct?
Yes, I live in Stellenbosch.
Now, how are things there? Because I understand that you guys are going through a bit of a drought.
Yes. This is a rainy season, so the rain has actually been a bit better. But we are in the middle of a quite a severe drought at the moment.
Everybody holding up okay?
No, they're fine. No, it's no problem from that point of view. There's very strict water restrictions. Mm-hmm. But the people have adapted well to it. It's amazing how quickly human beings adapt when there's a problem.
Yeah, very true, actually. Now, you're back in South Africa. Tell me about your medical practice.
So, I've had my practice for 18 years. I've just structured it in a way that I take little sabbaticals, and everybody around me understands that I get a bit of a rugby fix every now and then where I just go out. And do some rugby, and I just come back. So we are actually six people that work in the practice. So it is possible to slip away and get back in.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite astounding to think of the things that you do in the game as a small rugby fix.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, medicine and rugby is very, very, very similar. You know, you sit with a problem, there's a set of facts that you need to look at, and then you need to make a decision, and you must find a way to implement that decision. So it's not that complex. It's very similar, actually.
That's interesting, because we did speak last week when we were trying to arrange this interview. One of the things which you said, and it really struck me, is you're more interested in dealing with rugby situations which you find challenging rather than anything else.
No, absolutely. You know, I must admit, I don't stay with anywhere longer than 2 years. When I go into the deal, it's always just for 2 years. Then I get another place to go. Or it's been from the start, it's been like that. Because of my practice, you know, I can't come in and long-term coach for 10 years. That's not what I want to do. It's not interesting for me. And the only places I've ever been to are places that were broken. There was something wrong. And then they ask me, and then I come in, and then I look at it, and I give them my opinion, and I help, and I change things, and I change cultures, and I look at personnel, and I create environments, but then I leave again. And I think one of the advantages of that is that the one thing is it doesn't put pressure on the coach, whoever's there, because I don't want his job. You know, yeah. I'm very comfortable the way I do things. But it's way more interesting. I often, in my practice, they never give me an admin patient. In other words, when there's a form to fill in, I just don't do those things because I say there's other people that can do those things. I like to solve a problem. That's why I like rugby, because rugby has a whole range of problems. You know, you're never without. You're either in a problem or you're heading to a problem or you've just been through a problem, but You know, you the moment you get complacent and you think you've figured it out, you know, you're in trouble. It's the same thing with medicine. So even when you see people what currently don't have a problem, you know, the ability to look what could be a problem if they don't act on it now, it's part of good medicine. So it's exactly the same thing in rugby. It's you know, you can use the same analogy over and over and over again. Medicine and rugby is very similar. Problem-solving ability, you know, and both people are central to the problem or the solution, you know.
So obviously patients come in all sorts of shapes and sizes with all various different problems. Do you find a common problem among unsuccessful rugby teams? Is there something which keeps on cropping up over and over again?
No, absolutely. The theme is always the same, and that is that the coaching regime have got the inability to get the best out of their squad. So a good way to describe that would be is you've got a God-given body, mm-hmm. and it is what it is. You've got genetic predispositions and weaknesses and strengths, and your ability to understand that if you're predisposed to a disease does not mean you're going to get the disease. It just means you've got a bigger chance of getting the disease.
Yes.
And rugby is exactly the same thing. You've got a team that have got certain strengths and weaknesses, and if you go with a set formula, the set formula doesn't work the whole time for everybody, because you must look at the strengths and weaknesses of your team, and you must play to that, and you must work with people. And the bottom line is the happier people are, the more productive they are. It's as simple as that. So, and invariably, when you go into an environment, people are unhappy. That's very what happens. That's why they're not performing. And you only see the symptoms. So somebody would come in the practice and they'd say they have a headache. And I said, well, a headache is not a sickness. It's a symptom. I'm nauseous. It's a symptom. You know, I'm tired. It's a symptom. It's not a sickness. So what is the underlying problem? And how do we rectify the underlying problem? And sometimes it's more complex. There's numerous underlying problems. And you need a certain set of skills once you've identified the problem to fix the problem. And then you have to have the ability to motivate the people who you're fixing the problem with. If somebody's overweight or they're smoking, if they don't stop smoking or lose weight, you're not going to solve the problem. So it's so similar, medicine and rugby. It's unbelievably similar. It's exactly the same skills required. And there is a set of rules which you need to follow in rugby. If you don't have a good set piece, you know, if you don't have a well-organized structured defense, if you don't have some attacking flair, some attacking good attacking players, attacking structure, if you're not well-disciplined, you know, if you don't have a good exit strategy, all of these things are just, you can read that in a book, basically. You can go and Google good defensive structures in rugby, and I'm sure you'll come up with something. It's something with medicine.
Yeah.
And knowledge is very unimportant nowadays, because we've all got knowledge. It's the implementation of the knowledge which is the trick. And when you ask me, when I go to any environment, that's invariably the problem, is we want to solve problems with knowledge. We actually don't solve problems with knowledge. We solve problems with people, and then knowledge follows. Or you, is used as a tool to achieve whatever we need to achieve.
So how do you, once you enter a club, go about diagnosing the problem? Because I imagine you can't get a good idea of any issues until you're actually inside the club or inside that team structure.
So a good example would be Saracens, a team that I worked with. I went over as a defensive consultant, mm-hmm. and I saw the culture and the way individuals acted within that. And when they asked me to try and fix the problem as a full-time guy, I had 13 people go, and everybody said, but how can you have 13 people go? And see, because I knew them, I went there four times as a consultant, and it was a very unique, rare place where I actually went back and worked with them. But I knew that these players had certain characteristics in the way they acted that was never going to change, because that is a dilemma. And Saracens had the money to be able to do that, to let people go. And normally the process is a bit longer. But there's certain things you want of people, and sometimes you get to change people, but often, you're not going to change older people. And that thing is attitude, is fight, is having a dog in them, and is what I admire in rugby players, and a work ethic and a hunger. But if you don't have that, if you're complacent and you're lazy, I can try and change it, but it doesn't really work. So that's what I do. I can go in and I can reasonably quickly see. But most of the time, the dilemma is the coaching staff is more of the problem than the players. Mm-hmm. Players normally have a brilliant attitude, but coaches are asking or expecting something of a group of players, which they can't give them. And that's what makes it sometimes harder to say to a coach that the way you are treating your players and the way you are dealing with a problem, it will never give good results.
Yeah.
Or it could give temporary good results while you've got good players and you're winning. Because winning is brilliant energy, is great for the environment, but there will come a time that you lose. And the question is, how good are you when things go wrong? Not how good are you when things go right? I spoke to Mark McCall, who's a good friend. We coached together at Harrison's. And I said to him after this fantastic achievement of winning the premiership again, I said to him, Swally, for me, the most impressive thing was how you, as a head coach, head of the environment, kept the team together. I think Saracens lost 7 games on the trot somewhere this year in all competitions.
Yeah.
And that Mark had the ability to turn that around because he has a great environment. You know, and as a leader, he kept his head. That, for me, is a proper achievement. You know, where other people, you talk about losing the squad, and they just lost the squad. You know, and then coaches have to move on.
Now, do you think that coaches end up in these dead ends? And it does happen quite frequently where, you know, the culture collapses and everyone's unhappy. Do you think it's a product of too much pressure on coaches? Because when I have met them in the past, they always seem to do the longest hours. They always seem to be the most stressed. And I could see how that might influence the way that they train players.
No, absolutely. But, the dilemma with that is if you use a stick to beat people, that only works for that long. You know, people don't actually do it by themselves. I think that's just probably the most relevant thing I can say about this. The beating with people with a stick does work for certain periods. And I mean, even in England's environment at the moment, it's very challenging because it is used a certain way of dealing with people and treating people and players and coaches. And when you're getting results, people bear that. But when things go wrong, you know, and the only thing you've got in your hand is a stick. It becomes unbelievably difficult to turn environments around.
Yeah.
And when the pressure on the coach is at its highest, then his true colours will come out and he will turn in the players because it's not him. And I'm not saying Eddie's done that because I have no inside information saying that, but I'm saying that is the challenge because then it becomes us and them. Then it's not us and us anymore.
Yeah.
And because of the nature of rugby, that is the challenge. Is how do you keep a level head and treat people with kindness and dignity, even if you're not getting results? Even if you are going to end up being fired, can you take the pressure on it yourself? Can you take the responsibility and not keep placing it back to the player to make yourself feel better? It's a very basic human characteristic. Is you literally want to blame somebody else. If something goes wrong, the best way to make yourself feel better is to blame somebody else. And coaching doesn't work like that. You know, because if you do that, all will happen. You will lose your team, and that's it.
Yeah,
you must stay factual about your approach.
Do you think another reason that coaches may turn to harsher tactics to get results from their players is because it's so effective in the short term?
No, obviously, you know. But I mean, shouting—if you shout too much, it's like anything in life. People just don't hear you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, shouting, if you really shout, they will react because it's 5%. And it will be that all good coaches lose their temper and get frustrated at times. Mm-hmm. But if it happens the whole time, you know, it's like everything. They just don't hear you anymore. You know, I think invariably happens. It's results driven, the frustration. If the frustration of the coach is factual driven, in other words, performance driven, you know, rightly so. You must get cross because there's a certain standard that has to be adhered to. And that standard is a high level of effort and discipline and the work ethic, and that's how you function. And if it's not good enough, shout, scream and say it's not good enough and fire people. But that if the problem is a bad result, but it was not because of laziness or lack of effort, then fix the problem. You know, figure out new plans. You know, improve players' skill, improve their decision-making ability, and understand it's a process. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where coaches, in my opinion, get muzzled. They don't start with a plan in mind. You know, so then they are basically result-driven. Because if a result doesn't come, then something needs to be wrong. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you learn from bad results. You know, you're just getting more clever. I always say, I never lose, I just learn. It's simple as that. You know.
So, just go back to your Saracens days. You said, when you first arrived, that you let go of 13 people. When you were in that process, did you ever doubt yourself in any way? Because obviously 13 players from a squad is an awful lot.
No, absolutely. One of the players actually made me change my mind when we were there. You know, he said, you're wrong. I'm going to do this and this and this. And I said, well, just give us a minute, Edward and I. And he left the room and I said, well, maybe we're wrong. Let's give him a go. I like his attitude. And I changed my mind and just stayed on. So I'm not one of those people that I don't change my mind. If you come with a good argument, a factual argument, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm not always right. But with all the facts at my disposal, I would say this is what I believe we should do at the moment. You know, but we need to make a decision. Because if we make a decision, we can always change the decision and we'll get better at what we're doing. But if we're indecisive, we don't make decisions, you know, and I will give you factually what I expect of you. I always start the relationship with, this is what I want from you, what do you want from me? And then, or the other way around, what do you want from me, and I'll tell you what I want from you. So it's easy dealing with people like that, you know, and then we put all our cards on the table and you know, the contract is written. You do what I want, I do what you want, we'll always have a good relationship. If we've got a good relationship, both of us will perform. It's as simple as that. It's when we break the contract, when we don't adhere to the fine.
That's absolutely fascinating. I guess the problem there would be, you know exactly what you want because, you know, of your coaching pedigree. Do you think it's difficult for players to articulate what they want from their coach? Because I don't suppose it's a question that's often asked of them.
It's the best part of the problem. If you don't know what you want, how can I give it to you? So all I do is stimulate your thought process. Sometimes I would say to them, you don't have to tell me now. You can go home and write it out. But if you don't know what you want from me, I said, it's quite simple. I'll just help you a little bit. You want money from us because we're a professional rugby coach. So that's easy. Pay me at the end of the month. That's a need you have. You know, I say, you want me to upskill you, make you a better rugby player so you're worth more. That's very simple. You want me to turn up on time and be well prepared when I coach you. Well, that's simple. So I'll say, but I will tell you later what I expect from you. You know, so you must go and sit down. When I did this exercise with the Sharks, they spoke for 2 hours what they wanted from us because, you know, there was a reasonably dysfunctional coaching in place before that, and the dysfunctional wasn't unsuccessful. It was just a different way of doing things where I call it survival of the fittest environment. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe in survival of the fittest. You know, I believe in improving people and encouraging people and getting the best out of people, making them as good as they can be. Having a culling environment is easy. You just get rid of the weak spots the whole time, but that's not how the world works. If you want a long-term environment, you know, you cull long enough, everybody will look around and ask who's next.
Yeah.
You know, so in their case, when I asked them, they spent 2 hours about what they wanted. I told them in 5 minutes what I wanted. I said, they should do this all. I said, no, it's more than you think. Go and trust me. Never think when somebody gives you read the fine print. What I'm asking for is way harder than you think. But you know, I will give you whatever you want. You told me all your stuff was materialistic things and financial things and, you know, the time and all of these things, treating the family, those are easy. I can adhere to them. My stuff is different. What I want from you is different. You know, and trust me, you're not going to be able to do it if you're not 100% committed, 100% prepared the whole time.
Yeah, it's very much one of those cases, isn't it, of simple isn't necessarily easy.
No. When you see something, I always use the story of the guy who asked for a grain of wheat on a chessboard, and it doubles up, you know, there's 64 spots on a chessboard. And when the king said, look, it's easy, you know, give the people what they want, you know, and the, when they started working out how many grains of wheat it was thousands, millions of bags of wheat eventually. The king didn't understand what the person was wanting from him. And I'm saying is, if you understood what I wanted of you, you would have actually thought really clearly whether you're going to say, this is fine, I'll give you whatever I want, because I'm never going to back off. If you don't give me 100% that, I'm not going to back off. Then you've broken our contract. And all the money, all the time is not, I'm going to let you go when our relationship is severed.
Wow. I guess you've been through many different environments. Saracens, I guess, was also different because they did have a lot of financial backing. But in the absence of financial backing, how would you go about correcting an individual's behaviour? Or would you just cut that individual loose? How would you balance that when financial...
That is why you need a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Where there's no quick fix. You know, the reality is Man City just buys a team and they are successful. Toulon just bought a team and they're successful. There's a lot of places that you can. But, you know, all the studies on good organizations, it takes a little bit of time to build a healthy organization. So you need to hang in there while you're building a healthy organization. So it's a valid point you're saying, because for me, the most fun ever was taking what I call a player with a broken wing, a bird with a broken wing, and getting them for puke and actually building them up and making them believe in themselves, and those players become superstars. It's awesome when you create a superstar. So in the Saracens model is all of the academy players in our first year became British Lions and brilliant players. George Crew, Jamie George, Owen Farrell, all of them, Jackson Ray, the Saracens player of the year now, were all first-year academy players when I arrived there. We believed in them. And it was amazing at how little dropout rate we had. But there will be a dropout rate when there's not as much money. It just takes a little bit longer because you do need, at professional sports, you need quality players. It's as simple as that. You know, and you're not now with Benny Villapano and Owen and...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Marrow and Goody, and there's so many really, really good rugby players. That's Harrison at the moment. And the reality is it's the same thing. It's not all the great sides. Look at Montpellier this year. You know, having Bismarck and having Ron Pinar and Cruden and Franz Steyn, and there's just amazing rugby players. And you need the rugby players. But if you can take, I've got a saying which I always say to coaches, I said, good coaches can make a rugby team a good rugby team. But only great players will make a rugby team a great rugby team.
Yeah.
And you must understand that. Coaches do not win trophies. Coaches make teams competitive. Players win trophies. Good rugby players win trophies, not coaches. You know, coaches' job is to get the best out of people. That's their job. You know, and if they've got good people, there's potential. You see certain people who've got unlimited potential early on, and all you need to do is get to the system, allow them to develop. And I think that is a thing. One of my weaknesses is the problem that I stick with people too long, but I'd much rather stick with somebody too long and have a good relationship with them than tell everybody saying, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. I'm much more about what can you do, my approach.
So, in all the roles that you in all the roles that you've held in England, South Africa, and more recently Italy, are there significant cultural differences which you've had to overcome, or are those somewhat overblown?
I think one of the things is when I went over, and I'm the big boss, I'm completely in control, and I can do whatever I want. So my recent jobs have all been consultancy jobs. So I'm very aware that I work with my friends. I work with Alison, who's a friend. I work with Connor, who's a friend. You know, I work with McKennedy at Larache, who's a friend. They're good people. And I take a lesser role from that point of view. And when I would differ with them, it's not my team. I'm very clear that because I also know I'm often wrong. So I don't push something when it's my team, when I'm solely responsible for it. I will say, I understand, I do what everybody says, but this is what we're going to do. That is culturally hard when you don't create the whole culture yourself. And when you consciously say, I do disagree with this, but this is your team and you're my friend, and I'm going to back you. I'm not going to say yes, but tomorrow I'm going to back you in this thing. And it makes it harder, you know, but that is the way a consultant works. You must have the ability to do that. You know, when I worked with Darby Tron, he was with a South African under 20 side, and I said, he asked me if I can help him, and I said, let's just go for coffee. Let's talk. And, you know, we spoke for 2 hours, and then I said, I'll definitely be able to work with you because you've got a similar outlook on life and outlook on coaching. And I enjoyed very much working there. That's why I've always loved working wherever I've gone. And I always stay in contact with everybody I've always worked with. You know, at the Sharks with John Smith, at Lanarache with Nick Kennedy, at Ireland, at Italy with Connor, at South Africa with Alistair, purely because these are my friends. Mm. These are people I respect, and the relationship stayed very, very, very healthy. After we left, or wherever happened, because I do come in as a consultant. I do not come in as a long-term solution for anything, you know, because I am a medical doctor. That's what I do for a living, you know. And I cannot offer you, it's like the fine print in the contract, I cannot offer you more than I'm giving you, because I do go back to my practice. And I say that from the start.
Excellent. Now, do you have any players that come to mind that really impressed you during your time coaching? And I don't mean the guys who are naturally talented, because they impress everyone, but the guy who impresses you behind the scene with their work rate or their attitude towards their profession.
I must admit, everybody that stayed with me, whether it be at Saracens or London Irish or the Sharks, that stayed in my environment, I was very happy with. Because if you don't perform, you don't stay in my environment.
Yeah.
And perform for me is a brilliant attitude. You are in control of your attitude. You're not always in control of the outcome, but your attitude, you're 100% in control of. So all of those players, I can probably name 50 players who I was just unbelievably impressed with. Their attitude, I actually very rarely struggle that I have to say to somebody, I've never dropped a player out of a rugby team. I don't drop people. I rotate people. I debate performances with them. I say, at the moment, for a big game, I think, because we've got a rotation policy and we have a selection matches. So if there's a premiership final, I remember when Wiggy and Neil de Kock, we could literally not say who should play. And we flipped the coin. Wow. It was an honest, really. I said, I can't debate who's on form at the moment, because there's a difference between being better than somebody or being on form. Sometimes he's better than somebody else, but he's actually on form. You're not on form, so that pulls it through. I worked in London Irish as a consultant last year and this year, and everybody I work with in the environment, I was just so impressed with them. You know, there's very few weak links and lazy people that you should get rid of, you know.
Absolutely incredible. Just changing the subject a little bit. I was at home last Saturday watching England versus South Africa, and it seems to be there's a bit of a new dawn for this South African team. Are you quite optimistic about where they're going?
Yes, I think there's a lot of positives in what they're doing. The one dilemma is they seem to have to start all over again. Any organization has got, there's certain teething problems and school fees that you pay in making mistakes. And I think in their case, the one thing they should have done, they should have given over the baton a little bit better, sat with Alistair and said, what worked for you, what didn't work for you? Because Rossi is going to reinvent the wheel. You know, and there's so many positives looking at the game against the English. You know, but I think they are going to struggle at times because it takes time. It takes time to build a good rugby side. And South Africa, because there's so many players playing outside, aren't always having the ability to play their best players. Even when these players come back and Faf did well and Billy did well and Dwayne did well, Dwayne has to go back to Japan. You know, and Sailor are going to sit on Faf to come back and Watson are going to sit on Billy to come back. And it's hard building a team that work together, train together the whole time. You know, it's challenges that South Africa have that is going to complicate things. You know, that's going to make it harder than other places.
So do you think the secret to South Africa getting the players back, is it purely just a monetary issue?
What is that? Explain again.
Sorry, so the challenge for South Africa to get their players back, is it purely just a money issue and enough money being in the South African game?
Yes. Yes. No, it's just they can earn so much more money outside. It's as simple as that. I mean, I'm sure Billy is earning about, it's probably £550,000. You know, I mean, there's no one in South Africa that earns that. You know, Faf would have gone for 500. So, you know, Dwayne would earn 600,000 euro. It's just, I'm not, these are not facts. These are just if I understand the market at the moment, you know, and what was available, you know, this is what these players are earning. It's just so much money. So our currency is a huge problem. You know, it is just an issue, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean,
there are issues with transformation. You know, a lot of the players have left because there are decisions in our country that a certain amount of transformation has to happen. And if you're in a position 50-50 with a player of colour, you know, you're just not going to play. It's as simple as that. You know, and it has happened, and you know, we're very aware of that. It has to be. That is the set of rules our country functions by, and so be it. You know, so there are numerous things that complicate South Africa having the ability or having players leave.
Yeah. Do you think 2 years is enough for South Africa to get their act together in order to be competitive at the World Cup? And when I say competitive, I mean semi-finals and finals.
Look, it's unbelievably difficult competing at the highest level without any handicap. Any handicap. So I often say, okay, look at England. England, theoretically, have got one player at the moment playing outside of England who could potentially be considered, Chris Ashton. And he left because Eddie said he's not going to select him. He's got one English player at the moment playing outside of England. So when they have a training camp, South Africa have 300 professional rugby players playing outside of South Africa. It's amazing. I mean, that is a proper handicap. You know, and the solution is most probably simply recruiting or funding 35 players, paying them a fortune, you know. But then you lose all the depth. How long are those 35 going to play? How long contracts do they get? You know, the boys go to France, go to Japan, they earn 8-9 million rand. You know, the rugby quality is not as high as Super Rugby over and over. You don't travel as much. It's complex. I think they've got a complex challenge to make the team very good. It's not straightforward. It's not as easy as just saying, come in, just do this and this, change a bit of this, and there we go.
Yeah. Now, you've been more than generous with your time, so I won't keep you much longer. But I do think it's fair to talk about serious rugby issues for just one second. You're taking a little bit of an extended break from rugby at the moment for one of many reasons, to watch your son play. How is he getting on, and where's he playing?
Oh, no, he plays for a school called Polaris, and it's in his final year at school, and they have a lot of tournaments that they go all over the country. They're a good side. They probably with Great College, the best two sides in the country this year, and he plays really nicely, and I enjoy watching him, and I enjoy going everywhere for weekends and having the ability to go to all the stuff. But they ban in, let's say, September, October, so then I can get back to getting my rugby fix somewhere, which there is always another place to get my fix. So it's just this year, which I've decided not to do anything.
Now he sounds like he's progressing rather nicely, and I'm sure there's a bit of pressure on him, of course, because his surname's Venter. But do you expect him to take it to the next level? I mean, is that even what he wants to do?
Because of the way that I coach, there is actually no pressure on him. Yeah. Because if his effort his work ethic and his discipline is optimal, he gets unbelievable accolades from me. Uh-huh. And you know, the result is secondary. So I think it makes it easy, because I see it in my own home. It's senseless teaching a certain thing but not living your own life by those principles. So my own boy is already extremely successful. He works really hard. He's got great skill set. He's got great attitude. When they play, he makes the most tackles. He makes the most cleans. He makes the most carries. And I say, well, you're awesome. So he plays really well for me. He is talented. He's got a natural feel for the game. And he's got a brilliant attitude. And he's actually got barring a serious injury, he could be a professional rugby player. He's good enough to be a professional rugby player. You know, and it's mainly because of his attitude.
Excellent. Well, Brendan, I have also noticed that you've recently entered the world of Twitter. Can you just let everyone know where we can find you and where we can follow the goings on of Brendan Venter?
Sorry, man, I'm not that organised. You find me on Twitter. We debate certain issues at the moment. We're debating the Ashwin Williams, Nick Mallett, Mark Twitter.
Oh, I saw that.
Because it's a race debate. You know, and we are we're quite outspoken in saying that, you know, because we are not racist, we don't see the world like that. So it's hard for us to understand. And if people are hurt by things you say or do, you must tell them. That's how it works. And then people can try. All of us, most people are actually naturally quite good people. They don't go out there to hurt other people. You know, and if people share what hurts people, then you just don't do it again. You know, and you consider other people. And this is where we're saying at the moment, just tell us what is wrong, what was said wrong. You know, because then we can all think, because it's different. You know, I'm not a black person. I can never claim to be one. I do not know what black people feel because I'm white. And I'm going to, but if you don't tell me, I can't understand your pain. You know, if I'm, and it's the same thing, I'm not a woman. You know, if a woman says, but, you know, certain things you did offended me, I can say fine, because I can never be a woman. I can never be black. You know, and I think that's where we're coming from at the moment, is our outlook on life is we want to treat people well and with respect.
Yeah,
and we want to work with relationships.
Now, just to paint a bit more of a picture there for the listeners, what Brendan is referring to is a rather awkward thing in studio where Ashwin Williamson walked out. He had an argument with his fellow presenters on air, I think is what happened. And his and his co-presenters
Nick Mallett and Nas Buerta. He actually walked out on air in the middle of a live broadcast.
It was
huge. And it ended up saying, well, you know, he was treated unfairly, and he was treated in a demeaning way by these two. And like, everybody was, wow, that's not fair. You know, we understand. Then we said, well, what did they do? And then they would go, we don't know. And you know, Ingrid said, well, they're going to appoint somebody, and they're going to tell us last week, and then they were going to tell us yesterday, and now it's another week, and everybody's saying, but what is it? Just tell us so we can all understand each other better and treat each other better, because that is the object of the exercise. You know, we're not yet to, and this is where we're going at the moment. You know, what is it, what was said? How do we actually use this to learn from it, that we treat each other better? It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, both parties. In this case, it's race, but there's gender issues, there's sexuality issues, there's all kinds of issues. There's people who grew up without fathers. We all have got some form of issue in our lives. And if you talk about my philosophy in sports and coaching, it's better you know people when you spend time with people and you learn to know them. You start understanding what makes them function. And when you know what makes people function, you can actually get the best out of them. That's actually the bottom line in the thing. and knowing that people are different. We are not all the same. We don't see the world the same. I'm not necessarily right in the way I see the world, but if you don't tell me how you see it differently, how will I know? You know, so that is basically our philosophy in life and in sports. And sports is just an extension of life.
Do you think about these social issues quite a lot, Brendan?
Oh, massively, massively. You must understand, my day-to-day in my practice is all about that. People come in to me, and at the doctor, they expose their real, true feelings. And you actually realize how people that come out of broken homes, that grew up with our parents, or with a mom and dad who divorced, or with a parent died, or racial issues, or anything, sexuality issues, or people that are gay, or people that are straight. And this is the point that I make. This is probably what makes it different. That's the way I see the world. That's my day-to-day job. So when people come over me, my first thought is not, just get over it. My first thought is, how can we talk about this thing, debate it, and how do we understand each other better? Full stop. It's as simple as that, you know.
So,
and I mean, that's why this is a sport thing. You ask me, this is why that's the way it works in sport.
So is there anything that particularly concerns you going forward? Because obviously we've got a changing social environment. South Africa, I think, only exacerbates these problems in a lot of ways. So is there anything in particular that actually concerns you regarding it all?
The only thing that concerns me is that we can't have the conversation. Mm-hmm. We are supposed to have the conversation. The conversation keeps going about back, you don't understand how I feel. You know, and all we're saying is, then tell me how you feel. This is the conversation. Tell me when I offended you. Most people out there don't deliberately offend other people. That's not how we go out there. We're not trying to offend other people, you know. But it needs conversation. It needs these things. And sometimes it's actually a good thing. If it's dealt with in the right way, there's growth. People change. People adapt. People respect other people more, you know. In our country, there is a genuine desire to treat each other well.
Yeah.
You know, we would prefer, we are the Rainbow Nation. We want to respect other people. We do not want to go into little silos and all races live together separate. That's not how the world works, you know. Mm. Religion, you look at what happened in Ireland with the Protestants and the Catholics. You know, that was absurd. You know, people divided there because of religion. And it's everywhere people find a way to divide. And we want to actually say, well, that's the way I say it, that in my practice, nobody walks in and I say, oh, sorry, I don't see them, I don't see them, I don't see them, I only want to see one group of people. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You see all kinds of people, men, women, children, old people, young people, Christians, Muslims, straights, gays, blacks, whites, colors, Indians, you see everything. So I'm going, we're all just the same. Everybody's got the same issues, you know, and I see it more than anybody because I'm a doctor.
Yeah.
There's nothing on the board saying we don't see these group of people. Sorry, you know, it doesn't work like that. And I'm privileged because it's rare that you get into a position where people come through your door of all different kinds of social standing.
Excellent. Well, Brendan, you have been more than generous with your time, and I've kept you far longer than I said that I originally would. So thank you so much. I think I could have stayed here and asked you questions for a good couple of hours more, but I feel that you might have more pressing issues to attend to today.
Okay, no problem. It was nice talking to you. Thanks, Tim.
Well, there he was, Brendan Venter. Massive thank you to Brendan for coming on, because he, as you can tell, is a very, very busy man. I will be back next week with a very special guest. Not a rugby player, kind of a reporter, similar sort of feel to me. But you're going to have to wait and see and find out who he is next week. So until then, goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.